Welcome to this episode of On the Case, the LSC Law Society's podcast. I'm your host, Mia Ching. In each episode, we speak to various professionals and experts to gain insight into legal careers, law school, and other exciting developments in the world of law. Without further ado, sit back and enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a new episode of LSC's On the Case. Today, we're very happy to have Professor Jonathan Fisher as our speaker, currently a visiting professor in practice at LSC, where he teaches financial crime on the LLM, and a barrister at the prestigious Red Lion Chambers. Firstly, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Pleasure.
So we'll just start off with some very brief questions. I touched on it a little bit in the introduction, but could you give like a brief description of where you work now and also what Red Lion Chambers does?
Yes, of course. So I spend around 70% of my time working with Red Lion Chambers and around 30% of my time working on academic matters, such as teaching on the LLM and also doing a bit of research. And that's the divide. Red Lion Chambers is a set of chambers that is known for its expertise in serious crime, and it certainly covers all forms of criminal activity, whether prosecuting or defending. And that's been my home from the start, way back when I was a student and training. Although there have been periods of my professional life where I have worked in other chambers.
Speaking of perhaps university, could you give a brief sort of timeline of the stages in your career, perhaps starting with your law degree?
Yeah, sure. It's a very long time ago, so your listeners are going to be shocked. But my first degree was done in between 1975 and 1978, which really does give you my age and dates me. I did my postgraduate degree the year after, 1979, and then I undertook bar finals and got called to the bar in 1980, pupillage in 1981, and then a tenancy, so the start of practice in 1982. And I ran through as a practitioner all those years as a junior barrister up until 2003, when I became what was then Queen's Counsel, of course, now King's Counsel. So that's the timeline. And here I am, still here and still going strong.
It seems like you had a very sort of multiple stages in your career, and they all seem extremely like law oriented even from the start. So like you said, university degree, you did a bachelor's in law and then you did a master's in law at Cambridge. So it always seemed like you were really, really oriented towards a legal career. Was this always the case, or was there a time where you thought you might want to do something else?
So when I was, you know, at the stage of doing A-levels, I very much wanted to do history. And the school very much wanted to support me in applying to get a place for reading history. But my father was really dead against it. He was part of a generation that took the view that really, if you were going to do a degree, you should do it in a vocational subject. Where does history take you? Whereas, you know, if you do a study of law, then it helps you get into the profession. I actually don't think that advice was right, looking back. My father was not a lawyer. He was doing his best for me. I'm not going to say whether I regret or not that decision. But that's how I actually ended up. I mean, I was interested in law, but I really wanted to read history. I ended up studying law in my first degree. And I loved it. I fell in love with the study of law and the theory of law. The truth is, the first year, I was just coming to terms. It was all very strange. I mean, as a subject, it is different. I didn't do terribly well in my first year. And when we got to the second year, I realized I had to work a bit harder because my grades were pretty awful. And I spent a bit more time doing a bit of work because first year of study, I shouldn't be saying this to you, first year of study, I was spending a lot of time in the bar doing all sorts of other things that were interesting that weren't connected with the study of law. I, by the time the second year came, I really had to work properly. And my degree was split finals. So what you got on your second year went into with the third year, what classification of degree you got. So I had to work pretty hard during the second year to make sure that I got myself at least into the upper second category. And it was only then that I really started to fall in love with law. And to everybody's surprise, including mine, I produced a very good set of results in the second year. And that meant that I had to work really hard because I was on the line for a pretty high first if I could maintain it. So I had to work really hard in my third year to make sure that I did this. And I did, but I enjoyed it. And that's really when I, as I say, I fell in love with law.
Yeah, I think a lot of our listeners will be very happy to hear, or at least comforted to hear that at least during first year, even you, sort of like looking at where you are now in your stages of career, sort of didn't really take first year that seriously.
Well, I didn't take it seriously, but I found it all very odd. I mean, for example, I remember the law of contract and having to learn about things like assumption and that sort of stuff, and consideration, and thinking, what on earth? I just, first of all, just speaking simple English. I mean, I just didn't know what it was all about. And criminal law, even though I spent a whole career in it, I didn't understand at the time. I mean, again, we looked at it through mens rea and actus reus, and what does that mean? So it was all terribly strange. And yes, no, please be comforted, everybody, if you're listening to this. No substitute for hard work, but actually, it really does pay dividends.
So that's very interesting that you start off actually wanting to do history, and then you sort of parents sort of steered you towards law. I guess a lot of people can also relate to that. I know you said that law took a little bit of time before you really started to fall in love with law. So what attracted you to being a criminal law barrister, which is quite perhaps it
Yeah.
wasn't the case back then, but right now, it seems that being a solicitor in commercial law is the most popular legal career route. So, what attracted you to being a criminal
Yes.
barrister as opposed to anything else?
Well, I think it is even today, actually. I mean, there's a lot more money there for a start. So, the commercial solicitor route is undoubtedly a very popular one, not just because, of course, it's important and interesting. And it's also very well paid, as criminal work is not. I think there are two aspects to your question, actually. One is why advocacy, why the bar? And the second aspect is why criminal law? And so they're two actually to related but separate questions. Why advocacy? Again, I fell in love with it. I got involved in mooting in my second year, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I didn't think I would. And it's all very artificial. But once I got into it, I mean, the enjoyment of actually public speaking and being not just on the stage, but also arguing a case was really interesting. And I was rather good at it, according to the people that judged me. I became even more enthusiastic, decided I wanted to do advocacy. Now, all the judges, these moots are often judged by senior practitioners or judges. And I was, getting a good feedback saying you must go to the bar. You're a good advocate. And I remember correctly, we got into the semi-finals of the Observer mooting competition. Yes, so I think that was really where I got advocacy from. Criminal law is a different story. I was thinking of doing general civil commercial work and indeed some tax work. And my head of studies actually at Cambridge put me off it. He was a wonderful man. Dear boy, don't do that. Don't do that. He said, I've come to know you well. He said, you'll die. You'll die there. And I think what he meant by that was that the criminal work is very, very interesting. And it was not to suggest that the commercial work isn't, but there's more advocacy involved, I think, as a criminal lawyer. There's more travelling involved very very often, there's more drama. The drama of the criminal courts, you coming, obviously things have moved on a bit since Victorian Britain, but there's still drama in the criminal courts. And it's interesting if you're interested in public performance. I don't want to suggest that all the criminal bar is as a game, because in fact you have the privilege of working with people who are at their lowest point in life and helping them. That is a privilege. It really, really is. And that's part of a motivation for going into criminal work. But you know, I'm not going to pretend to you that there isn't that element of performance that I think all criminal barristers have and enjoy. There's always been a strong relationship between the theatre and the bar.
Okay, so yeah, I guess there's a couple of sides to why you're attracted to criminal law. As you said, the theater and the drama of it, it's probably what we're all used to just watching on the TV. Is it much like the TV as it shows, or do you think there's some
It depends which one
differences?
you watch. I mean, I don't know which program you're thinking of. I mean, if you think of the one that was around not so long ago, I can't remember what it was called. I think it was called Silt, where you know there were depictions of barristers snorting cocaine on the stairs. I've not seen that. If you look at something like Rumple of the Bailey, which is long before your time but is still a classic, or John Deed, for example. It's not like that either. I mean, we're talking about serious professional work being done, and so I don't think television really represents it as well as it could. But of course, that makes good TV, doesn't
Yeah, so just a little bit of the drama, but maybe not to
it?
the extent that TV shows. We did talk about a little bit of criminal law, but your area of criminal law, which is financial crime, it might be a little bit different to what our listeners traditionally think of as criminal law, which, involves murder and violence and drugs and all that type. So what about this specific area of criminal law interested you enough to make it your specialty?
Yeah, I mean, it was partly planning and partly luck, which is true, I think, of a lot of people. And you ask them how they've got into something, they will give you that answer. I certainly was interested in the intersection between civil and criminal law. I'd always found that fascinating. You know, where you're dealing with prosecuting or defending somebody who's been involved in a pub fight, they're, you know, charged with GBH. There's not much intersection with the civil law. But you know, if you're dealing with concepts of dishonesty and property law and where the criminal law fits in, what is the division, where's the line between criminal law as a public one and a private sector, fraud, for example, in that type of situation. But yes, I mean, there is a very interesting challenge to work in the on the borderline. I certainly always wanted to do that. And then I say it was partly luck, but one of the things that happened early on in my career was that I ended up defending in a number of big fraud cases. And so I got into, as it were, financial crime at a very early stage. And so that's early stage of my career. And so that's how this sort of focus on fraud work, financial crime, and corporate crime developed. I've thoroughly enjoyed it and I've encouraged it. I like to operate along that line. It's very interesting, it's very challenging. And of course, today it's really cutting edge. I mean, things, you know, do move on. For example, you know, you look at things like the law of bribery. The law, criminal law of bribery, was not clear many, you know, some, when I started the bar. We didn't have, I mean, again, you just get a feeling of how old I am, but we didn't have insider dealing as a criminal offence. There was no money laundering offence. And yet these are mainstays now of the criminal diet. But they're challenging because they all turn on civil concepts of property law and what is acceptable conduct, what isn't. And it's developing fast. I mean, there are two, last year we had an Economic Crime Act. This year we've got another one coming through. It's cutting edge work. So I'm very comfortable.
Speaking of financial crime and your experience in it, have you ever been frustrated with the outcome of a case that you worked on and why?
I suppose you have your disappointments that you're working with a team of people and for the client, and it doesn't always work out as you would like it to. Maybe the right answer is delivered, Usually it is, I have to tell you. Usually the judge's decisions, the jury's decisions are the right ones. But you can degree, you can develop a sense of frustration on occasions. I think it's more perhaps disappointment. I think that you certainly feel on occasions that you wish you'd have done something better or different. And I think, in a way, the moment that feeling leaves you, you should probably retire. But at the end of the day, I don't think you can carry that. You know, it's like this is like any other job in that sense. You believe in the system, you believe in the rule of law, and the rule of law in the UK produces its results. And you've got to go with it. That's, I think, how I see it.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. The next question sort of takes a little bit of a wider look at your career again. I saw that you're a registered practitioner in the Dubai International Financial Court, which is quite interesting. Now, how did this come about, and what was the process like to be registered in a foreign country?
So not design but luck. I got instructed in a rather large case involving anti-money laundering, counter-terrorist financing, where there was an allegation that the auditors had not audited a bank with sufficient care, and that therefore the bank had been they'd allowed the bank to come money laundering finance terror. And we were looking for the right jurisdiction to bring the case. And because the auditors were actually based out in Dubai, but understand that the Dubai International Financial Court is effectively a private arrangement. It's not actually being registered in the courts of the UAE, for example. So I'm not a foreign lawyer. I think there's a difference between being registered as an advocate in an international court like Dubai or Singapore, and being in the registered as a practitioner in a foreign jurisdiction. That's much more difficult.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thanks for the clarification on, being just registered in an international court and actually being a barrister in another country. So moving on from a bit of your work as a barrister, I think now most of your work is advisory. So could you give a brief explanation of what advisory work means and how that might be different to representing a client in court?
Well, I still go to court when the occasion requires it. I've just not put myself out there to do court work. The advisory work is very much as it sounds, really, that you are giving specialist advice in areas that people need assistance. And so, in my area of financial crime, with it being so much at the cutting edge, business needs and clients need to have clear advice on where the line is between what is lawful and what is unlawful. And so you end up developing quite an advisory practice in that area, advising companies and they should stay on, how they can stay and how they must stay on the right side of the law. And also we are living in times where increasingly regulation is achieved through making disclosures to the various authorities. And there's a need for specialist advice as to when something needs to be disclosed or when it shouldn't be disclosed. And so, you find yourself giving advice in these rather difficult areas because it is all so new. But again, it's very challenging, very interesting.
So we'll move on to the next thing, which is a little bit more of an creative or imaginative question. If you had to sum up the work culture you've experienced as a criminal barrister, so this could be at Red Lion Chambers or any other chambers that you've been in so far, in three words, what would they be and why?
Okay, well, I think the characteristics that I'd identify, the three of them, would be first of all that working in chambers is very familial in the sense that the bar is a bit of a village. It's a small group of people at the end of the day, and we do get to know each other rather well. And so, in that sense, it's sort of rather like a family, that there are some very strong friendships, some very strong bonds, but there are also fallings out. So I think that's the first one. The second thing I think I'd identify is to say that the second characteristic is really one of support. I think the bar is a very supportive profession, It is really not uncommon at all for senior members of the bar to help junior members. You can be in court representing a client, you're not, as a junior member, you're not sure what to do. You can go and ask any practitioner, senior, and they will talk to you, they will tell you, they will help you. It's a very supportive. And I think the third thing I'd identify is integrity, that again, being a closed world, the whole system would break down if we couldn't trust each other. And I think that's very important. And that's very true of your relationship with the court. The judge, the bench, the court needs to be able to trust it. And so I would say familial, supportive, and integrity.
Yeah, so just a final question then. For other people who are pursuing the same career, what's one crucial thing that you think they must do? So this could be a certain skill or work experience that you think has to be done.
It's interesting. I think I would say tenacity is the key ingredient that is needed. Tenacity to get there, to get a tenancy, which I think is difficult today. And if you are talking about the criminal world, criminal law world, tenacity to be able to actually sustain a practice. But I think also tenacity on behalf of your client in court. I don't want to make out that, you know, every barrister is an obstinate individual who clings on to, you know, locks onto something. But I do think that is an ingredient of it. I think you'd be squashed, frankly, if you didn't have that tenacity. And that's not going to do your clients any good. So I think, you know, you need to be strong and firm. Now, I'm not suggesting you go over the top. I'm not suggesting, you know, you use all means, fair or foul. I'm not saying that at all. But I think I am saying that you need to be tenacious. Tenacity is the word.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense as well, especially in a job that involves so much advocacy. So, thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you so much for agreeing to do this, especially while you're on holiday and abroad.
It's
So,
okay, it's a pleasure. I'm always happy to do that. And I obviously wish you and all your listeners the very best of luck in what you're doing at LSE. And wish you a wonderful time at LSE. Really, School of Opportunity, it's a fantastic place. And I'm always happy if anybody is listening, part of the LSE, part of the LSE family is listening and wants to contact me.
hello everyone. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of On the Case, the LSE Law Society's podcast. Further information and our contact details can be found in the description of this episode. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at LSCSU Law Soc or on LinkedIn at LSE's On the Case. See you next time.